Okay, case number 510-3567, United States versus Nathaniel Warden, and it's Mr. Bosch. Hello, Mr. Bosch. Yeah, good morning.
Still is. May it please the court.
And it better be when the two of you are done.
My name is Michael Bosch. I represent Nathaniel Warden. This is a tough case, as every case like this is, for counsel, but nevertheless, I'm ethically bound to, and he is entitled to expect, a zealous defense. And that's what we're doing here today. And quite frankly, with regard to Mr. Warden's sentence, I was pleased with it. This was not his first time around. It was a plea for 35 years. He was off the charts given regarding the sentencing guidelines. He pled guilty in February of 2010. He was sentenced in July, and we came back in October for the restitution hearing. And quite frankly, I had no idea what I was going to say walking into the restitution hearing. It had been all so neatly laid out by the government. The evidence, or what I thought was the evidence, was there. And then when they put Dr. Silberg on the stand, and she said, one of the things, among others, that you can never predict is, will the patient actually treat? Through discovery, I know that the patient is not actually treating. 22 months after the initial exam, Amy, and she certainly is a victim, and it's difficult to argue that she shouldn't get all the money in the world, given what's been done to her, but she's not treating. I had found, as I mentioned to the trial court, in reported decisions that the same victim, on the same set of facts, had been awarded sums varying from $3,000 to in excess of $2 million. I was provided with discovery, which showed that at the time of Mr. Warden's sentencing, Amy had some 496 claims in various courts around the country. We were ordered, or Mr. Warden was ordered, to pay $533,000 and some change in restitution.
You know, I'm going to stop you because I'm rude. No, I'm going to stop you because in the colloquy, Warden acknowledged that he was waiving his right to appeal any order of restitution. So why isn't that dispositive as to the scope of the waiver that he believed he was agreeing to? And, you know, why are we getting into anything else?
And I expected to get interrupted in that, okay, in that regard. I was happy to get as far as I did. In the colloquy,
we must be asleep up here. What are we doing?
On page 23 of the colloquy, Judge Van Bocklin says, do you understand that in paragraph 70 on pages 5 and 6, you will have no right to appeal your conviction or sentence or any order of restitution in the manner by which they were imposed? Well, paragraph 70 of the plea does not say that. It does not speak to restitution. Restitution is not mentioned in the plea.
It speaks to the sentence.
Pardon me?
It speaks to the sentence.
It does. It does. And I cannot dispute that restitution is not a part of a sentence. It's confusing in a case like this, though, given the bifurcated nature of the sentencing process. He got sentenced in July to his 35 years. We didn't go back in and argue the restitution until October 25th. So it was confusing, certainly to me. Then, on page 47 of the colloquy, judge says, after you plead guilty, you will have no right to appeal your conviction or sentence or any order of restitution in the manner by which they were imposed. Do you understand that? Well, quite frankly, I didn't understand that. I didn't understand exactly what he was saying there.
Did you stop him?
I did not.
What did you think he was saying?
And once again, this was in July. I thought that he was saying, or my sense at the time was, you can't appeal the fact that we can order restitution. I did not think did not realize, did not consider that we were also waiving a right to appeal the amount.
You would agree you were waiving the right to appeal the amount of prison time?
We were. That was, in fact, set out explicitly in the plea.
But you're saying you construed this as being a waiver only of an appeal as to whether restitution was ordered and not the amount?
No, no. I thought appealable, the amount could be appealable, not the fact that restitution was ordered in the first place.
How do you get that out of that language?
Because, as in the cases cited in the brief, Berman, they say it's not clear. The circuit says it's not clear. The government mentioned in their reply brief Bounds, and in Bounds, the plea came right out and said, you don't get to appeal the amount of restitution. Why didn't we just say it here?
Well, the fact of restitution on appeal would be, in this case, a frivolous appeal, wouldn't it? Obviously, it's right there in the statute that restitution is to be ordered.
That's correct.
So the only thing that was being conceded here is the amount of restitution.
I was conceding restitution, but not the
amount. Could you not have just said, we reserve the right to challenge at a hearing the amount of restitution and preserve all your rights? I mean, it was right there in front of you, was it not?
In retrospect,
this information.
In retrospect, I should have done that. I will tell you this also. The court, at several stages in the restitution process, lamented the lack of congressional and appellate guidance in how to award an amount of restitution. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what we're left with here. In fact, we don't quibble. Amy is a victim, was a victim, will be a victim. Not even quibbling with the expert's credentials. She has them. Not quibbling with the totals she came up with. We're quibbling with the fact that the victim is not going to treat. That's the only evidence we have, that the victim is not going to use.
But we don't know that. The fact that she's not consistently seeking counseling at this point doesn't mean she's not going to avail herself of counseling in the future. That's not that's not an atypical cycle for a person who addresses problems like these.
Well, how do we have some reasonable degree of certainty? The testimony from Dr. Silberg was she needs therapy weekly. She's had it 4 times in 2 years.
Doesn't mean that if she didn't find someone that she could trust and feel comfortable with, that she would, go forward.
It does not, but the point remains that we're still guessing.
Is Amy allowed to go into, in every prosecution of this sort, she can go in and obtain an award of restitution, as you say, in various amounts. But those are individual judgments against that particular defendant, right? So they're not joined in several with, is typically awards of restitution are joined in several with other defendants.
Typically they are not.
So arguably, because this is on the internet, she could become a very wealthy woman because she could assert this in every single case.
And she's doing that. They have a nice package that they have put together.
So I guess this is more a question I'm going to have to ask the government about, but, what tethers the amount of damage to her to a restitution award, unless you have a proximate causation issue, which I don't think you're even arguing in.
No, we did not raise that. Judge Van Bocklin had rejected that argument, so I did not pursue it on appeal. Probably mistakenly, again.
Thank you, Mr. Bosch. How are you, Mr. Huller?
I'm all right, Your Honors. Thank you, Judge Rovner. And
May it please the court. Judge Lefkoe, anticipating your question, I agree that the issues of how exactly to award restitution to Amy and child pornography victims like her under 18 U.S.C. 2259 is a difficult one. And as the 28J letters that we've submitted demonstrate, it has already split the courts of appeals. This court, however, cannot reach that issue because the defendant waived it in his plea agreement. And he comes up with no answer as to how the court can overcome that waiver. So I just want to briefly cover that, and I will get to the merits. But we believe that if the defendant concedes that restitution is part of a criminal sentence, Warden waived his right to appeal the sentence, and I think that the court's decisions in Berman and Sines are best reconciled by recognizing that in Berman the appeal waiver was narrow. This court in Berman told us how to write a broader waiver, and this court in Sines agreed that that waiver was broad enough to cover supervised release, and it's also broad enough to cover restitution as well.
But, why doesn't the government set forth explicitly that the waiver includes the appeal of any order of restitution so as to avoid this issue? You know, the problems of interpretation to ensure that the defendant is aware of the actual scope of the waiver.
Well, I agree with you to a point, Judge Rovner, and certainly in looking at this agreement, we noticed that in, I forget which exactly district it is, in Bounds does include order of restitution in their appeal waiver paragraph, and these things are constantly changing, and we constantly do that. But we at this to date, we assume that restitution is part of the sentence. We mention restitution as we're required to do
so
by Rule 11.
So it's your that absent any limiting language, the reference to a sentence in an appeal waiver will necessarily include restitution as well as any term of imprisonment, and that every defendant is going to understand that?
As
I don't understand that.
Well, Your Honor, that's why there's a Rule 11 colloquy that's gone over that explains to the defendant what the component parts of the sentence are. And just as in Sines, I don't know that there was a specific explanation of supervised release and a distinction as to whether that's part of the sentence. The restitution and the fine and the special assessment are all parts of the sentence, and that is all covered by the Rule 11 agreement. Now, if restitution had never been mentioned, and even I believe there are cases that say, if you look at the Wright case, they say, you know, you didn't mention the specific statutory provision. You didn't mention the specific mandatory nature under 2259, so we're going to reach this issue. But even if the court thinks, look, if there were indications from the plea colloquy that this specifically was talking about imprisonment, and even if the court thinks, you know, there needs to be more, there is more here. There is more in the plea agreement itself with the specific references to 2259, and there are discussions during the plea agreement where the district court says, you know, sentence includes restitution, and the defendant himself stands up even and says, we're aware that the government has told us that there are going to be restitution claims in this case. It's not even a case where restitution gets mentioned and everybody thinks there isn't restitution and suddenly somebody makes a claim. So this particular defendant, even if the court thinks, you know, we want to reserve those sorts of circumstances, those circumstances are not present here. So the court cannot reach the merits of the issue. And turning to the merits of the issue itself, the defendant has conceded that Amy is a victim. This court's decision in Sherman supports that, and the other, despite the varying approaches that the courts of appeals have taken, they have all essentially stated that Amy and those like her, these child pornography victims, are victims for purposes of 2259.
Does the record tell us how much Amy has collected over the years?
The record tells us that as of the, and I don't know if this was as of October of 2010 or as some date before, that she had collected $143,000 is how much she has collected.
And what's extant out there? What would the, you know,
well, there are a couple of,
bring us?
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. No. There are a couple of judgments that are over $3 million that we've cited to. There are, the Wright judgment is roughly the same as this judgment. That judgment obviously was just reversed on appeal by the Fifth Circuit and remanded for further proceedings, although it's, I believe, tied up in the in-bank process. There are other judgments in the excess of $100,000 range. There are other judgments that are less than that. So there are judgments of that nature that are out there, and that district court judges have come to different conclusions on. I mean, we are at the point where there are many different decisions, and it's hard for me to see how this isn't going to have to be resolved by a legislative fix or the Supreme Court where we are right now, to be candid, Your Honors. But that said, that's sort of where proceedings are. In the Fifth Circuit, I think they're looking at both their sort of dueling decisions in Bank. Amy herself is participating in Monzel in the D.C. Circuit and has filed a pleading there indicating she is going to seek not in bank review but Supreme Court review itself. And the Staples decision where the 11th Circuit dismissed on an appeal waiver a $3 million judgment is pending in the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court has ordered the government to respond to the cert petition. So this issue is out there in other cases.
That is why a waiver is of great benefit to the government, correct?
It is of great benefit to the government here, so that we don't have to litigate this. But Judge Hamilton, the defendant
got. You got the guideline range for this fellow was 60 years, right?
It was, Your Honor.
And you all agreed to one count, the minimum sentence, correct?
Yes, although I would clarify, the count that we agreed to, we could have pled him to a different count that would have had a lower minimum sentence. So, I mean. If he had gone to trial and been
suggesting he got a pretty good deal.
He got a very good deal, Your Honor.
Even as severe as this is.
He did, Your Honor. And if
and
he had
one of the trade-offs was the waiver.
I agree with that, Your Honor. And if the defendant had come to us and had said, I want to present this and I want to deal with this, he rolled the dice here. And candidly, Your Honor, many district court judges, in fact, the majority of district court judges, have been giving awards that are far less than this. But I also don't know, realistically, and I don't want to, this shouldn't minimize the importance of this in any way. I don't mean to do that. But, you know, realistically, this defendant is indigent. This defendant is incarcerated. And I don't know, practically speaking, how important the difference between a $3,000 award, which is what he wanted, and a $533,000 award is. There may be, and it may be down the line 20, 30 years from now, that will be important.
He may win the lottery.
And he might win the lottery. But that's the kind of trade-off that he made is, am I going to sort of risk the fact that I might win the lottery and get the government to agree to 35 years, which gives me a chance to get out of jail in my 50s and gives me some hope if I'm rehabilitated, or do I want to take a 60-year sentence, which is effectively a life sentence, or negotiate something in the middle, which could have happened as well. But that is what occurred here. So those are the kinds of concerns. As to his specific claim that I find that we believe he is presenting as to whether sort of the possibility that Amy is not going to go to treatment or not, I think that the district court is the one that hears the testimony from the expert, and the expert testified some of the things that you said, Judge Rovner, which are, we believe that she's having difficulties because of her mental illness that was precipitated by this, because she hasn't found a treating psychiatrist, because she needs, at this point, frankly, inpatient treatment. And we want, and I want, to present that to her as an option and alternative. And we don't know where she is in all of that. But inherent in this court's opinion in Dancer that says that future damages are appropriate under this statute is the idea that there is some uncertainty to that and that an expert can testify and can say, I think it's likely that she's going to do that. And the defendant here sought expert witnesses, and I don't know what exactly he located or how much time he had to do that. But, you know, that's where this needs to be played out is district court discretion as to deciding what's the likelihood she's going to use this for future treatment, what's the realistic nature of what these damages are, and what's a proper award. And the district courts need the discretion to make those awards. But in this particular case, Your Honors, I don't even think that this court can reach the merits of that particular argument because restitution is part of the sentence. We think that it's part of that sentence, period. But even if you don't want to go that far, under the specific circumstances of this case, where restitution is mentioned in the plea agreement, where restitution is specifically discussed at the change of plea hearing, we think it's covered. And I don't think that the distinction here is any different from that was at play in Bounds or in other cases where suddenly Booker came up and nobody anticipated it beforehand, or that of really any other defendant who tries to get out of an appeal waiver, who thinks going in that, you know, the judge isn't going to award $500,000. The judge isn't going to give me the maximum sentence. It's just not going to happen. I don't need to worry about it. And bam, suddenly the district court judge did just that, what you didn't expect. And that's why we have Rule 11. That's why we have the district court judge saying, I have discretion to do all of these things, so that we inform the defendant of that, and he can make an informed decision of what he wants to do. Under those circumstances, Your Honors, we would ask that this appeal be dismissed.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Mr. Bosch, how much time? Come on up. We'll give you two.
Once again, I don't understand how the plea waiver language in Warden is any different than the plea waiver language in Berman. Bounds, once again, came right out and said it. That's how I think we get past issue one. Issue two, and one of the things I ask for in my prayer, is remand this to the district court for another hearing on what the damages should be. It was a guess. The expert has never even talked to Amy about what she thinks her treatment should be. The only evidence, as I pointed out to Dr. Silberg, that she had at the present time was that Amy's not treating. How do you guess then as to what the amount of damages are?
Isn't it always going to be a guess?
Yeah.
It's going to be.
$3,000 is a guess, $500,000 is a guess.
Well, $3,000, one of the things I suggested, is nominal damages.
Thank you so much. You were court appointed, weren't you?
I was, Your Honor.
Thank you.